listening to Sharp Elbows. My name is Nada. I'm here with the incomparable representative Francesca Hong and the amazing Sasha. You know, one of the most beautiful things I've read, Sasha, and I say beautiful because it hit me with its truth. You articulated something I think a lot of Black Indigenous people of color feel right here in Madison in your tone piece. And you said, I couldn't wait for the snow to thaw so I could run through the Arboretum trails again. I had doubts that very many Black people were working with the Civilian Conservation Corps in 1934. When they knelt there and replanted trees, even if they were, I had serious doubts about them being treated as equal because it hadn't happened to me here yet. And for me, that brought up this theme, this motif of there being two Madisons, right? This bustling city in the Midwest, this college town that, you know, boasts trails and a happy, good life for a lot of rich white people. And when you walk down the street, you have an incredibly different, contrasting reality. So if you could delve into, you know, did I interpret that right? or were you, did you mean something else by that? But if you could delve into it, I think a lot of people would feel connected with your words.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. Yeah, it's weird. It's like I got this fellowship. That's why I'm back here at UW. And it's like the honor of my life to be in the program. Like I'm truly, I love it, right? But it is really complicated for me to move back here after some of the treatment I experienced. And that's like not fair, right? Mm-hmm. You know, on top of the pandemic, you know, and that happens probably everywhere, you know, all over the Midwest. They're bringing in Black artists and stuff to make money off them, but you know, they have to go to these white towns. So this is like, this is just what happens. But something I've been thinking about a lot, you know, walking around in Madison in the winter is like how idyllic like it would have been to be a kid here, and mm-hmm. how, you know, you would like, you could be like having a snowball fight in the parking lot and of the church, and like doing all these cute like winter camps and all that stuff, and like starting to think about myself at the co-op, like having to, you know, answer little kids who are like, why does her hair look like that, mm-hmm. you know, and thinking of myself as like, yeah, that's all, you know, it's like those two things exist together. They can't not exist together, you know? Mm-hmm. And it sucks, but that's right. That's it. I felt like I was like the first Black person, like a lot of white kids saw in 2014, mm-hmm. you know? And that's something that you can feel, but if I still even feel silly, honestly, talking about this now, I feel like I'm exaggerating because I can just see in my mind, I shut my eyes and I see like, sitting in the, like getting, you know, people rolling their eyes at me.
Yeah.
You know, when I was 24 and experiencing this stuff.
Yeah.
And it wasn't okay. Yeah. And I thought I was wrong. And like, it's taken me a long time to, you know, realize I wasn't. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's, yeah, I connect with that a lot. And I know we were talking before the break about history being maybe escapable for some people, and then for others it's not so much, and for Black Indigenous people of color it's trauma, maybe a generational memory that you take that affects you for the rest of your life, you know.
Totally. Yeah I don't know, I mean, I think I'll probably always be writing about living here.
Mm-hmm.
And I write really nice things about living here too. I really do. Mm-hmm. Because I do appreciate some things, but you know, I learn more and more every day that things are not black and white.
Mm-hmm. That's profound. Francesca, how was your experience growing up here in Madison? I know mine mirrors Sasha's very much.
So I think a lot about proximity and geography when it comes to my experience here. I think about proximity to whiteness now. Obviously, when you're like 9, 10, you're not really in that analytical mindset. But for me, I remember very distinctly how happy I was playing outside in Eagle Heights, which is the university housing over on the near west side. I went to an elementary school where we celebrated International Week, which was kids from, you know, we represented over 50 countries because of, you know, largely due to the university population and of students and grad students and their families being in university housing and also going to Shorewood. And I thought that's how the world was. I thought the world was me and a bunch of other kids of different colors and backgrounds. And the more you grow up in this town, the more you realize that's not a reality. And I think most of my childhood was trying to understand where I fit in, like so many people. I think that's a childhood story we all share, is trying to figure out where we fit in. And for me, I never found that. I think I always used achievement as a way to measure, it was, you know, my worth, and it was how many activities was I in, how, you know, how did I perform on the soccer field? And that's a very, it's an unhealthy way to, and not, it's an unhealthy thing. And it's a way that you don't really experience. I didn't let myself experience a lot of joy. Even though I had an immensely supportive family and supportive friends, you still felt very much isolated because, you know, I didn't really fit in with Korean kids because I was born here, and some of them were here for just a short period of time, and I didn't speak the language as well. And, you know, most of my friends were white, and I think that I always felt different, but told myself that I was accepted and ignored all the microaggressions and comments about being Asian, or, you know, when someone comes in my house and talks about how it smells, like you just ignore it and hope that, you know, you ignore it because the reality is painful and you just want to avoid that pain. So, but there were also, I'm so proud to be from here. I'm still very proud to live here. And I think being part of growth and transformation, it's happening right now. Like I'm not trying to be overly optimistic and sugarcoat, you know, how toxic some of the positivity can be, but I think we're having more conversations about the realities of what it's like for people of color that are living in Madison, and recognizing that it's not monolithic, that the experiences are very different, even within within a community of color. And that, you know, even within the Asian experience, there are vast socioeconomic differences, vast cultural differences, vast ethnic differences that, you know, because of the way government policy works, is different for a lot of people. And mm-hmm. I just want us to be a community that makes it less isolating for folks, because I think that was a dominant part of my childhood was even though you're surrounded by so many people, to feel lonely.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. You're listening to Sharp Elbows, Nada, Fran, and Sasha. Tune back in after the break. We'd love to hear from you. Call us at 844-967-2789 to share your experience as well.
America has chosen Joe Biden and Kamala Harris to lead our country. Now it's time to get to work. Time to expand healthcare and tackle the coronavirus pandemic. Time to restore our democracy and unify our nation. It's time to put this administration to work for us. Text ACT to 668-366 to join the Move On movement to build an America for all. MoveOn.org. Political action paid for and is responsible for the content of this advertising. Poll.MoveOn.org. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
Hey, it's Pizza Box Mike. I've got a show outside the Pizza Box. Be sure to listen on Saturdays at noon on Devil Radio. There is a reason why they won't let me on Facebook anymore.
Tune into Sharp Elbows. It's on at 10 a.m. Saturdays with me, Representative Francesca Hong, and my friend Nada El-Makashvi. Every Saturday morning, we want to have a conversation with you about what's going on in the world. Whether it's on the biggest issues, current events, or people who inspire us, let's discuss it all. It's kind of like brunch, but with politics, guests, and callers. No shortage of fun, but also be prepared for some serious truth-telling. Talk to y'all soon.
Sharp Elbows airs Saturdays 10 a.m. only on Devil Radio 92.7.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct. We'll be covering politics, all politics, from national to local, but from a Wisconsin perspective. This is open mic, no holds barred. You call in on any political subject.
If you can say to a judge, the Attorney General of the United States instructed all the U.S. attorneys to investigate for fraud, which itself was wrong, anti-democratic. The U.S. attorneys don't go on a witch hunt.
Listen to Matt Flynn Direct every weekday from 6 to 8 a.m. only on Devil Radio. Gotta cut you
down. Five Nines, your local single source IT solutions provider. Specializing in cloud technology, consulting, servers, networks, and hosting. We manage your IT so you can focus on running your business. Enjoy technology. Enjoy 5Nines.com.
Hear history as it happens, only on Devil Radio 92.7 FM.
Morning. We are back. This is Sharp Elbows with Francesca, Nada, and the amazing Sasha Debevic McKenney. And we have a caller on the line. Emily, welcome.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, awesome. This is so cool. I'm Emily. I live in Madison. I have really appreciated your guys' conversation. I have a question for Sasha, but first I want to say I really liked the questions that Nada and Francesca have been asking because I feel about your content, Sasha, because I feel like it's like I'm in a book club right now and we're like discussing your poem. as someone who's known your work, Sasha, for a while, I'm wondering, but I don't feel like literate in the poetry world or publishing poems, like it's just not, I don't like know anything about that. I was wondering if there's any part of that process that's like particularly challenging, like getting your work in front of people's eyes, and like, is there something that you wish you could change about that, or that you just want to like air out some grievances about?
Air out some grievances about writing or about the piece in general?
About getting things like published, like get like, I don't know how you like I don't know how poetry works. Like you submit things.
Yeah, it's hard because
as someone who knows you and your work, I'm just like, what are the hurdles?
Yeah, it's hard. See, in poems you can lie. In the tone piece, like I couldn't lie. And that was really, really hard. I feel like I have to do a level of like removing myself from everything I write so that it doesn't like hurt me when other people read it. And I'm really grateful for like Tone and for Nada and Francesca and you, Emily, for like reading this, because with poems, I feel like you have to perform a little and you have to like, there's a level of like, I don't know, it has to maybe sound a certain way. And for this piece, I got to just be like, this is how I really feel. And I want to make people feel bad or think harder. And I got to like really hammer that in. And that's different from poems because people don't have to, that's too subjective. And people like bad poems. That's my answer. You're great.
Yeah, thank you, okay. Emily. That's a really great question. Taking it a little bit to politics and to kind of go off that tone piece as well. I saw that you mentioned in your tone piece, Sasha, that your vote was one of the votes Trump tried to have thrown out. Interestingly enough, this past week, the Legislative Audit Committee, which Rep. Pong is a part of, voted on a scope to audit election administration. So I was hoping, Fran, could you give us a little bit of insight on what's happening this week, what's happening next week in the world of politics, and what happened with the Audit Committee?
Yes, so much. Oh my gosh, so much. So the Audit Committee, again, this was a scope for a potential audit of the elections administration. And so what this means is essentially like a space where the senators and representatives and members of the public can come in and essentially provide testimony and ask questions of the auditor and other interested parties about what the scope of this audit should look like. And all of my Democratic colleagues and I voted no that this audit should happen at all, because we believe that there is some selective, at least I think that there's definitely going to be some selective, they're trying to provoke and bring back issues that were not issues in this last election, which is the most heavily scrutinized, the most secure, and the most safe election we probably have administered, that our clerks and all of the hardworking elections officials administered, I would say the history. And so unfortunately, the vote was on party lines and the audit will continue, but I would like to reiterate that the Audit Bureau is a nonpartisan, independent agency, and the scope of this audit, we hope, will not only again reiterate how secure and safe and our elections were administered this past cycle, that moving forward, we look to find ways to ensure that every vote counts and that the focus is more on the realities of voter suppression that exist in our state due to barriers like voter ID laws, and that we're not focusing so much on the technicalities of having possibly someone who was, you know, not trying to suppress people's voices and instead uplift them. And we have an amazing elections commission that have worked tirelessly to ensure that these elections have been safe, and we value their work. In terms of what's happening in the legislature next week, the Assembly and the Senate will be in session, and the Assembly will be discussing AB 2, because we're now on our second piece of legislation that we're trying to push to the governor's desk. I'd like to reiterate again, there has not been one bill that has passed yet this year, and zero since April of 2020. But this bill will include a lot of important tax reforms and structures, namely what we'll be debating on. Well, the big thing that we're debating on is the tax structure of PPP loans, and whether we'll be conforming to what's regulated at the federal level and adopt those rules here in Wisconsin, or if there are ways that we can make those who receive PPP loans try to make it a more equitable process, and that the state does not lose out on tax revenue that could be used to provide direct relief to our small businesses as well as our individuals. So there's a lot happening in the legislature all the time. Be sure you can catch up on our social pages, as well as if you'd like to tune in on WISI, you can watch some of our sessions happening next Tuesday.
So at some point we had a mask order, then we didn't have a mask order, and then an hour later we had it again. So if you wanted to clarify for a minute just what's happening with that specific thing, I think people would appreciate it.
Yes, we do currently have the governor's executive order for a public health emergency order, which includes a mask mandate. right now there is a possibility that once the Supreme Courts are, if they bring that back up in terms of if he can issue concurrent public health orders, there is a chance that that might be overturned. But as of now, there is a mask mandate in place, there is a public health order in place, and we continue to be climbing in the ranks of vaccines administered and shots in arms. I believe right now we're eighth in the country, and the federal government has just announced that there will be vaccines shipped directly to community distribution centers and pharmacies. So there are more opportunities for folks who are eligible to be able to sign up to get the vaccine. You can find out more information for Dane County on our Dane County Public Health website, as well as the state's Department of Health Services websites. But there's good news on the vaccine front, and I just hope that we can get it together in the legislature and start passing legislation that can provide and supplement that those vaccines with actual relief for folks.
Yeah, imagine if government did what government should do. It'd be really great. I mean, we're going up. It's looking good for Wisconsin. I just really hope that they follow through next week. But I'm glad that you're there, Fran, to push for that. Real quick, before we go on to the recipe of the week, it is Black History Month, such an important month for so many people. I wanted to ask each of you what Black History Month meant for you. For me, I think it's the one month a year where I choose to focus specifically on such proud points in Black history, in American Black history, the moments, the people that have inspired so much in me. And so it's a time of reflection and hope for myself. And then the rest of the year is just a time of, you know, being mad about white supremacy. So I was hoping that each of you would just talk about what Black History, you know, month means to you. Sasha, do you wanna take this first?
Yeah, the first thing that popped into my head was just like something that was really radicalizing for me, which is just sort of realizing that it wasn't like Lincoln freed the slaves, you know, like the enslaved people freed themselves. Yeah. Black people were writing, Black people were fighting, Black people were organizing, freeing themselves, freeing each other. And like, when you view American history from that point of view, with that reality, it makes me feel stronger and like it's not like so sectioned off into a month. I wish like everyone knew how much like the abolition movement was led by Black people. And
mm-hmm. Thank you, Sasha. I love that. Fran, you have 2 minutes to answer that question and then do a recipe. Can you make it?
Credit, context, and joy. Black History Month should be a celebration and actually having non-Black people talk about their achievements and how much we owe Black people in our current present and recognize how integral they've been to so much of the culture that we are privileged to experience, whether it's music and art, education, recognizing and giving credit to Black people is what Black History Month is for me. In terms of the recipe, I posted on my Instagram page, I made some banana bread French toast the other day. And so I thought I'd share that recipe with folks. Just the French toast part, you can use your favorite banana bread recipe. Make sure you cut it into thick 1-inch slices and that it's day old. It's really important in French toast that you use a vehicle that can absorb all that yummy custard. And for the custard, 4 eggs, a cup of milk. You can also sub in a non-dairy substitute if you'd like. Tablespoon of vanilla extract, a teaspoon of ground cinnamon, and this is gonna sound weird, but crushed up cornflakes, or I had honey bunches of oats. Mix your batter or your custard together. Don't mix your cornflakes into that. That's for later. Mix it together. Make sure your banana bread kind of soaks in that for at least a half hour if you have it. Otherwise, if you're doing this right in the morning, it's no big deal if you just have to dip and go straight to your skillet. I like to use a nonstick skillet when I'm doing French toast, and I do a mix of coconut oil and butter. If you'd like, you can use whatever type of oil as well. Make sure that you use